Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast.
Outlawed.
This time, this week, we're just reviewing this week because there's no fights this weekend.
Mate, that is a rarity, isn't it?
It's weird.
What are they doing?
Lazy. I don't know. I'll
be able to sleep. They're getting lazy.
I'll be able to sleep this weekend.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about UFC 260. Loads to talk about. Wow. We have a new champ.
We do.
Very exciting.
We do. Before we kick off, so we are once again sponsored by Unbound Merino Wool.
Well, we weren't. I just refused to take this hoodie off.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Oh, it's just so nice.
It's pretty good.
I can just wear it all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, keeps me warm when I need to be warm, but it cools me down when I'm cool. Honestly, like, I need everything made out of merino wool.
I love it. And so, yeah, if you want to click the link below and you will get a discount at the checkout. They are very cool.
The code's Outlaw.
Code is Outlaw, yeah.
Outlaw, not Outlawed. Okay.
Outlaw. Okay. Yeah.
I put the wrong code in when I was getting my discount. Okay.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Happy days.
Let's have a look.
Where do you want to start?
I mean, it was fun all the way through, really, wasn't it?
It was fun. What did I say about that first fight, though? A Zaitar against Barrio.
It's going to be a dramatic... They are moaning about it now.
Who is?
A Zaitar's camp.
Why?
I briefly looked at it this morning on social media. So as the mouth guard drops out, he goes to get it, and the ref puts his hand on the back of Barrio, as in to say, look, stop them and put them out. And now I know that's not the rules, but that is what they're contesting. And they were saying this morning on social media that they're officially contesting that, in that they felt like that he was coming in to stop that and put the mouth guard in, and then he changed. And I know that's not the rules. He waits till the position is settled right, and then
yeah.
And then exactly what he did. But they were going pretty hard on social media this morning. Ottman, his brother, and the agent, who seems to literally be everywhere at the minute.
Yeah.
They were not happy about it at all.
Well, they're not, no.
No. But it came to fruition, right? What you said is Abu went hard as he could,
dude,
right from the start. And
right.
He's beastie, but you can't keep that rate up for that long, can you?
Just punches himself out.
Yeah.
Just completely punches himself out. And it's like I watched the first round back this morning, and it's like within the first three, he throws more punches than seconds in the first 5 seconds of the fight.
Yeah.
Like, he comes out and everything, you can see how much he's leaning into his shots as well.
You are not Max Holloway, my friend. Do not put that out.
That is going to just, it just drains you, doesn't it? And you know, across the side, you look at Barrio, he's just a dog, isn't he? I mean, he's just a dog. He's
slow,
tough, durable.
Twitch, endurance.
Yeah.
Just keep going.
He took some
big punches.
Mm.
He really did take some big punches. And he just, you know, I guess that was his plan. He would have been like,
Let's just have a look at this. So we're at what time? The third round. 4:10
so
on the clock. I mean, he is literally.
You see him put his hand on his back there, right? So that's what they're contesting. In that he sees the mouth. He's going down to pick the mouthpiece up. It's not enough to.
Nah.
I mean, he's done anyway. Let's be fair. He's done.
That was, I mean, that is exhaustion as well. Like, he's shot him for a takedown, trying to get that single leg, gets refused, drops his, and he's not even dropping his mouth guard out from a punch.
It's just
from
exhaustion.
He's too tired. Like, if your mouth guard comes out in a fight, that's your fault.
It's almost like coincidence his mouth guard happened to be down there, because he was already, like, punched over from the hip. Oh, there's my mouth guard. I didn't realise it would come out.
Yeah.
And then he stops it right here, right, and puts his mouth guard back in.
It's like you know if your mouth guard comes out. I don't understand where the issue is there.
So they slowed it down and zoomed in on the fact that the ref had put his hand on the back of Barrio, on the small of Barrio's back, as in to sort of, well, he's going to stop it, but it's still not the case anyway, is it?
No.
He's never going to stop something mid-flow like that.
No. Oh, he's just spent, isn't he?
Yeah.
And it's exactly what I expected from Barrio. You know, he was going to weather an early storm. He was going to be up against it. And then he was just going to grind him into the canvas. Like, he's one of those guys.
He is a grinder.
Yeah. And what a relief as well. I mean, what was it? Three losses in a row and then
yeah.
a failed drug test in his first
yeah.
victory?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bit... I don't know.
I mean, I like the Zaitar brothers, you know, especially Ottman as far as skill-wise, watching him. But, like, Ottman was the one that got kicked out of Fight Island for breaking quarantine and stuff. It's,
I don't know, man. I got a funny feeling about them too. They're a bit like, they're almost come across like they're spoiled, like, oh, I don't care about the rules, and oh no, it was a ref decision, that's why. Mate, you are long gone in that fight. You are long gone. Whether that mouth guard dropped out or not is almost irrelevant.
I'd be interested to see what it looked like at welterweight. It looks like he's a bit too heavily
muscled. There's a bit
muscled.
Of a bear suit on top of there, isn't there?
A little bit.
He could definitely lean down. I mean, it's got a hell of a lot of power.
Yeah,
it's
oh, for sure.
A serious amount of power. If you could make that a bit more efficient and a bit more accurate, you know, he'd be... There's a lot of wailing punches in there, isn't there?
Yeah. A lot of missing, you know?
And
I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about with the main event. And also, someone tweeted at me today as well, and they were like, oh, we saw that, you know, how much a power punch costs somebody when they miss in the Tyron Woodley fight.
Yeah.
Same situation, you know? It was always, and that's where Tyron Woodley holds back in his fights. That's why he's hesitant, because he knows if he misses, it's going to be exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, generally is an energetic cost to it. You're essentially having to break that using your own muscles rather than you throwing it connecting, and all of that work is then negated. You don't need to break it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, those big dudes that are throwing with that amount of power, that's a lot of momentum to then have to put the brakes on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at this. I'm just looking at the stats of this as well. So Barrio landed 22 punches in the first... Oh, sorry. Let's go total strikes instead of significant. He landed 34 total strikes and took 66 in the first round.
Yeah.
In the second round, he landed 66 and took 61. In the third round, he landed 90 and took 15. Like, I mean, that nice progression.
Turning the switch up.
Yeah. And then you like, look at control as well. 110 for Barrio, 120 for Azaitar in the first round. 43 seconds apiece in the second round. And then the third round, Barrio was in control for 4 minutes and seven
proper
seconds.
Proper, like, changing of the guard within the fight. Yeah. I swear, you can almost you felt his, like, fatigue. Like, after a couple of times up against the fence and he'd, you know, thrown a load of punches, you could almost see him, like, oh, no.
Yeah.
My arm's gone.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible. But
like, if that's something that he got on top of, though, like, if he was able to get over that limitation of his cardiovascular system.
He's not accurate enough, I don't think. I think that's his progression. But I don't think he could get enough cardio to fight the way he fights.
No, but that's part of it. Is a part of the fixing of his cardiovascular issue.
He's
would be making him technically better.
Absolutely, yeah. He could do no more fitness training. But if he cleaned up his technique and got more efficient, I just don't think he would have those problems.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Or maybe not throw a power punch with every single one that you throw.
Yeah. I guess if you got that power, like, you're proud of it and you want to use it, don't you? But, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know what, I mean, would the decision have gone his way? If it had gone the distance?
No.
I don't think it would have done.
No, that was only going one way.
Yeah. I think he was... I mean, you got the first round based on stats alone, but the fight just slipped away.
The first round
was
the most competitive.
Yeah. And then the last one was just a shutout, really.
Yeah, no way.
Who's
next? Omar and Shane.
Omar Morales. He just does not look himself at featherweight, Morales. You know when you go back and watch him at lightweight, he was aggressive, he was sharp. Like, since he's cut down,
I saw that a little bit different.
Did you? Yeah.
Well, I thought he was very disciplined in what he did, because that could have been an all-out brawl in a heartbeat. Like, Shane Young's down to brawl and he's down. He's coming to fight, and I wasn't sure. I didn't read it like that. I thought he was being almost pragmatic. Like, oh shit, if I get in a brawl here, this is a flip of the coin because they can both bang. And I thought he was being, I thought he was trying to manage his fatigue and just pick him apart a little bit. Because I thought it was a dangerous fight for him. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, how many times do we have to address fighting in the weight class that you're comfortable at? It makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It's interesting that was your take on it, and I do get that perspective, but I didn't feel the same. I didn't feel like he was managing his engagement with Shane Young because he was respectful of how dangerous Shane Young was. I felt like he was managing it based on how he felt personally.
Right. Yeah, You know? Big, isn't he?
He is massive. He's massive. First thing I said when the fight started, I turned to Vian, I'm like, gee, he looks huge at this weight class. Yeah. He just, like, you go back to his fight against Benitez or Don Young Ma, and he was like, he was scrapping. Like, in moments where Shane Young stepped in to engage, he would have thrown 2-3 punches back. And in this fight, he didn't. He threw a jab and circled off. And there was no point where I felt like he really went and took it from Shane Young.
No, you know? Not at all.
It was like the fight shifted in his direction, and he just kind of cruised to the decision with that pace. He just didn't go and get it like he has done previously, and he didn't against Giga Chikadze as well. You know, which obviously is considerably more dangerous.
Yeah.
Given the fact that Chikadze is such a high level striker.
But I mean, Shane didn't do too much wrong, right?
He was, not really.
You know,
he's just a bit reckless.
Yeah, it seemed like a tricky fight. Like, if maybe we'd seen it slightly differently. It seemed like a tricky fight in that whoever kind of messed up first is going to get punished for it a little bit. And I thought they were reasonable performances by both of them.
Yeah, just Shane Young wasn't hesitant though.
Yeah,
like when the fight started, he was like.
Yeah.
He was like ready to go, and he shadowed him all the way around the edge of the octagon.
He found it difficult to get in though, didn't he? Like he was kept at a range a little bit, and I felt like he wanted to get in there, get in the pocket and throw some hands. But I thought Omar kind of managed that well, and that's what made me think, oh, he doesn't want to do that. That's why he's sort of fight from the outside, and he's keeping him at range a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the best is yet to come for Shane Young, right? 27. So. He's clearly a good fighter. It might be one of those. He just needs a couple of wins, and then he gets on that roll, and his confidence is up.
Yeah, what's interesting though is he's not got that city kickboxing witchcraft in his game. Mm. He's not got it, and Dan Hooker doesn't have it either. And I'm not sure that we were talking about this a little while ago. I think the game planning from city kickboxing is good, and I think the technical ability is good. If the fighter has the capacity to understand that technical ability, like there were lots of circumstances in that fight where he could have controlled the space better and set himself up to get inside the striking range of Morales, and he didn't. And I partly feel like that was why he was hesitant, because if your option is to put your face first every time you step into range, you're going to get hesitant. Whereas if you know you can get inside without risking your own face, you're going to do it.
Yeah.
And he is a little bit of a warmonger. That's one of the reasons why I like Shane Young. Like, you can see him, like, you know, remember when it was his last opponent he was fighting, he walked onto the stage and he slapped Dana's hand out of the way, and he was like fucking like in war mode.
He's got the Maori gene.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You can see him
do the hongi at the end.
Yeah.
The nose and forehead to each other.
Yeah. He did that third eye stuff, Ludwig Klein. Yeah, it is for sure.
From anything I've ever read about the hongi, I've never seen like the third eye mentioned, but it seems like there's some third eye stuff going on there.
I think so. Yeah.
I think it like effectively translates as you're no longer a stranger.
Yeah.
Like physically you're no longer a stranger.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I like it.
It which is weird, because as soon as a couple of pub men have had too many beers in the UK, first thing they do is go forehead to forehead, isn't it?
slightly like, different context.
Come on, motherfucker. Yeah. Come on.
Like, a few Stellas. Kicks it off. Yeah. I wonder what Morales does. I wonder whether he's what, 33?
Yeah, a little bit of a late start. I don't know whether the featherweight division is any easier to navigate than lightweight at the moment.
Not really.
And especially if your performance at lightweight is, you know, say we use his performance at lightweight as the standard of what he can achieve as far as output goes. If that's rated as 100, I'd say this version of him at featherweight is about 85.
Yeah.
He's just not quite there.
I mean, you'd rather just go out on your shield, wouldn't you, and just fight the way you're supposed to fight at and take it, you know.
I wouldn't say there's anybody like, there's nothing particularly stand out about his game. He's just generally well rounded, so he's got as good a chance of people at featherweight as he has at lightweight. And I just but feel like
those savages at the top of both of those divisions, like, okay, solid game's not going to be enough anyway.
No, like, exactly.
You're talking elite, those guys in those divisions at the minute. That, you know, he's where he's at in either weight class, he's probably edge of the top 15-ish, isn't he? Like, he's probably, like, there's someone later on I was going to talk about, but you just get a feel of where they're at. Like, you would have to make massive improvements in your game to break the top 10. You're just not, you know, you can just, if you see enough fighters, you just you just get the vibe, don't you? Yeah. Like you know, you're a 10 to 15 rank fighter, which is great, but that's probably your genetic potential.
Yeah. And I mean, I think given the fact that he's stronger, he looks and appears to me, especially for his output, he looks stronger at 155. He's got a better chance of beating 155ers because he's a better version of himself. Mm. Like you look at the outside of the top 15 or just inside the top 15 at featherweight, right? So 15 to 10, you've got Movsar Evloev, who's going to maul anybody regardless of whether you're a lightweight or a featherweight. Edson Barbosa, I don't know how he made featherweight. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Bryce Mitchell could be problematic, but that might be an interesting fight for him. Shane Burgos is another interesting fight. Sadiq Youssef and Arnold Allen. And I mean, even Jeremy Stevens at 9. You've got, like, they're decent fights for him. Yeah. But I wouldn't say they're any easier than Gregor Gillespie, Alia Quinta, Kevin Lee, Diego Ferreira, Islam Makhachev. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather be 15% better and roll the dice against those guys.
It's not a great landscape either way, is
no.
it?
But like, Movsar Evloev is going to do exactly what Makhachev is going to do to you, or what Gregor Gillespie is going to do to you.
But you stand a better chance because your camp isn't all about your weight the whole time. You're actually got enough energy to start developing your skills.
Mm.
You know, you can go in there feeling like your tank is topped up and you're ready to go. I agree.
I know they're killers in that top, but I would even look at that top 15 and say you could probably remove a couple of those guys. Like Felder's probably not going to fight unless it's a super fight, and he's ranked at number 10. Kevin Lee at number 13. I don't know when he's planning on coming back. Mm. And same with Alia Quinta. Like a bit faded into obscurity, a couple of these guys. They're not
faded
very active.
Faded into real estate.
Faded into real estate. Must be some money, isn't it?
Yeah, it must be lucrative, mustn't it?
When is Alia Quinta fighting again? I've just said that and I'm like, now you watch, he's been matched up recently. I'm gonna have a quick look.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing it.
No. I quite like the... No.
No. Nothing.
No, he faced Mike Perry on Chael Sonnen's Submission Underground on the 23rd of February last year. That was the last time he was out. You seen Sonnen Jones going back and forth?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I sort of understand.
Pay the man. He's the best fighter on the planet.
He's the best fighter on the planet.
Pay the man. Pay the man.
I agree, man. Like, he does get... I know he's been, shall we say, a little loose out of the octagon. But he's the baddest man on the planet. Yeah. If he was a saint, you'd be a little bit like, oh, that's weird.
Exactly.
So I do get that. And I know there's some question marks over his pharmaceutical use and what have you. But John Jones is the best fighter we've ever seen for over a long period of time.
Yeah.
And he kind of deserves it.
Yeah.
Like, just because you're the best fighter of all time doesn't mean you have to be... palatable to everyone.
No,
whether you like him or not, he's still the best fighter of all time.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Chael. I like Chael and the person that he is, and you know, Chael Sonnen's a character.
Yeah,
like he's a character. Please understand this. Chael Sonnen in person is a different individual.
Well, I've never met him, but I can well imagine he's probably quite a nice guy.
He's a great dude. I've had some real nice messages from him, but like he plays a character when he's playing that role, and that's exactly what he's doing, and he's so good at it.
Yeah,
he's so good at being an instigator for drama in the MMA world. But when
he's
he
like
was
a fluffer
mate,
he's
yeah
like, he's like fluffing drama all
how many times
that?
Have he failed a drug test? How many?
Yeah,
he's failed right. a drug test so many times. It's like he makes jokes about it. He did in his last fight, it's like, well, it's the first time I've not pissed hot, or like he makes jokes about it all the time. The idea that John Jones is afraid to fight Francis Ngannou is ridiculous.
Yeah, like based off what?
What we were talking about the other week, right? Like if you're John Jones, you don't look at Francis Ngannou the way that us mere mortals look at him.
Nah.
Like, if Daniel Cormier looks at Ngannou and thinks to himself, you know what, I think I could probably beat him.
John Jones is definitely
thinking
the same thing.
John Jones can think that.
Man.
And I still fancy his chances. Like, the X factor for Ngannou is that he's got to land. And this is something else we've got to talk about. I know we're jumping around a bit. There's no way that the smaller octagon doesn't change the fight.
Mate,
this narrative is nonsense.
He nearly didn't have to jump to get out to his coaches. He just sort of like peeked over the top.
Just box jump, just stand on the side.
Of course, if you're fighting Francis, you want as much space as humanly possible, right?
As humanly possible. Do his chances of not getting hit with a power punch improve if he's fighting on a tennis court? Yes, they do.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Baseball field. Right. Go for it. If you can get to me, good on you. Yeah.
But like, this is the thing. And like, people, like, so the full size octagon's 30 feet. The apex octagon's 25 feet.
Mm.
It's a difference of about 200 square feet of space, which then, and consider this, if you made the octagon, the 25 foot octagon into a tank, a fish tank, and you filled it with water, you drop O'Malley in there against Thomas Almeida and, what, 280 pounds of water's been displaced.
Yeah.
You put two heavyweights in there, yeah, and everyone's got their feet
wet.
It's a lot of volume.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's such a weird narrative that is like, that constantly reinforces, it makes no difference to the... Of course it does.
Yeah.
Like, there's even an article about it I was reading yesterday about how the finish rate has jumped up like 12% since they started.
Who's making the case that it doesn't make any difference?
I've heard Dana really double down on it, saying that the smaller octagon makes no difference.
Yeah.
If you're playing on an NFL field that's 360 feet long,
I don't know, you take
a third off that, and that's now 240 feet long. How much is played in that last third of the field?
Yeah, of course it makes a difference, and it's never going to make more difference than a heavyweight, is it? Like, that's where the maximum impact is going to be.
For sure.
Anyway. John ain't scared, man.
No, of course he's not.
Like,
he's scared of brain damage and not getting weighed in for it. That's what he's scared of, which he should be. Like, you know, get paid. If you're taking that kind of risk, get paid.
Yeah, I agree. And it's the fight to make.
It's a super fight to make. And it just infuriates me that it's being insinuated that he's afraid.
I feel like it's probably people projecting how they would feel in that situation.
Yeah.
Like, hold on a minute, John's the baddest man on the planet at the minute.
Of course.
How about you let him decide whether he's afraid or not?
And the reality is, like, if I was standing across the octagon from Ngannou, I'd be a little bit fucking afraid myself as well.
Oh, because I would never get in there in the first place.
But this is the thing.
No way.
But this is the thing. In the right circumstance, with the right money,
yeah,
I'd take that fight. Yeah. Because there's a little bit of a crazy chip in my fucking head.
Just enough. There might just be that one time.
Fighters are dreamers, man. Yeah. Fighters are dreamers. And if I'm John Jones, I'm definitely thinking I can win that fight.
Yeah, and it's, John's looking big, man.
Yeah.
He's looking big. I'd love to have watched like how he's got that, whether he's just laid that muscle on or whether he's stayed explosive, stayed moving. Or, you know, I know he got into sort of powerlifting for a time around the time he failed the drug test or hid from the drug testers. But
he may have got that from the chalk bucket at the gym he was training at.
Maybe,
I mean, like, I've seen photos of the inside of that gym, and it's reminiscent of some place I've trained before.
If he can layer that weight on and still move like John Jones moves at light heavyweight, good luck.
How much weight do you think he'd have to gain to negate the force of Ngannou coming forward? Like, Stipe came in at 235, and I saw something about DC saying that he should have come in heavier.
But it didn't suit him last time. I think it's a very individual thing. He couldn't put a flat rate number on it because it just depends how he moves. The minute he starts to lose any speed, because he's going to beat him by speed and technique. Mm. He's not going to outpower him. It's impossible to outpower him.
Yeah.
Just the mechanical power. He's going to beat him by timing, technique and speed. So the minute your weight gets heavy enough that it's limiting your speed, well, that's the time you need to either pause it or bring it back down a little bit. But it'd be so subjective to work that out.
Mm.
Fascinating fight.
You just got to kind of edge your bets on it. If I'm Stipe, I'm like, I need to be able to work hard for 25 minutes because that's how I'm weaponizing my conditioning against him.
Mm.
The first round is always going to be hard work because I've always got to try and keep away from him. And again, you know, you put that, the last fight was in full size octagon, wasn't it? Like, you give him that space and it makes a massive difference with his head movement, with his footwork.
Yeah.
Like, he couldn't get away from Ngannou. And this is the thing, I don't, like, Ngannou had definitely improved. Ngannou's definitely improved. He was more cautious, he was more measured, his footwork was better, you know what I mean? But at the same time, Ngannou last time would have beaten Stipe in the smaller octagon. Because he would have got to him quicker. He would have landed those shots that Stipe was able to slip and get away from. Like, you remember that clip where he's up against the fence?
This was my kind of fight because you could see the process by which he'd got better. Like, yeah, they'd gone away and gone, oh, you're not going to win like that. You could win like that, but you're not going to win like that. You've got it all. This is what we need to do with you. And fair play to Extreme Couture and the guys that have been working. Who's the coach that we...
Dewey Cooper was in his corner, yeah, and Eric Nixick.
Yeah, right. You know, fair play to them. They got him to calm down. They got him to be accurate, more accurate, should I say. And I was just... I was impressed by the training interventions that they'd put in place. Yeah. I was like, oh, well done, guys. You've nailed it there. That's what coaches are for.
Yeah.
I just thought he looked good. Mm. I thought Stipe was almost like took back by how patient he was. He was like, no, I need you to come at me. That's what I'm going
to... I need you to swing so I can slip and get out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. And then he was like... Because he didn't want to engage and come in, did he? Because he was like... this is not how it works. I know exactly what you're going to do. Come on, do it.
Yeah. And you've got Ngannou posturing, like, either hand could come. Come on. Either one could go. And then you're like, and it's that threat of something happening that then forces Stipe back up against the fence. And Ngannou's like, which way are you going to go? Which way are you going to go? Like, last time, Stipe needed him to roll that dice first so he could get himself off the fence, and he didn't do it this time around.
Very, very tricky puzzle for Stipe when you're suddenly faced with something you're not expecting like that, and you know the consequences of getting this wrong.
And the punch that knocked him down was a straight punch as well.
Yeah.
Which is another adaptation.
Another one. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I love Ngannou's story. I love the way he's sort of, you know, what he's done and how he's got there, and he's champion of the world, and it's just a movie in it.
Did you see the reactions around the world?
Yeah,
it was brilliant. Love it. And I tell you what I love as well is that photo of him standing on some stairs. Have you seen him from like 10 years ago? He was already on brand.
Amazing. Such forward thinking.
Yeah, it's just got a couple of little piercings in his ear. Yeah. And
he's not that big, is he?
He's not.
Mind you, I think he'd be pretty young, but it wasn't nothing compared to...
Yeah, how old is he now?
The stature of him now. But, I really like Stipe. I think he's been a great champ. I'll be down with a rematch. I'll be all good with that. It'd be nice to let him have a shot to get that back. But yeah, it was a good result.
Yeah,
it's a good result for Ngannou.
Do you think Stipe comes back and fights him again?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Depends on how well he's done, I suppose, in the last few years.
If I was Stipe, I'd be thinking about retiring from MMA and crossing over to the Triller card. Like Antonio Tarver. Yeah. He'd probably get weighed in and get a lot more money for it. Like,
you know, he's got two little kids now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it changes your perspective. It seems to go either way, right? Like, so for Cowboy, it gave him the impetus to get back in there and go for it. But it does, to some degree, remind you of your mortality. Like, you've got people relying on you now. You've got little helpless children relying on you. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what you do. You know, you must have stacked some cash over the last few.
You'd hope so.
Yeah.
You'd hope so. Yeah. Is it the downside to Miocic is that he's not... It's never been as easy for the UFC to market him.
No.
You know?
No.
It was kind of the same with Demetrius Johnson. Like, although he was incredible, he was difficult to market because when he's not in the octagon, he's jet washing his drive.
Yeah.
Or he's playing video games with 12-year-olds. And, like, that's, like, you can't market someone jet washing their drive as the baddest man on the planet.
You do have to, like, remind yourself you're a product sort of thing, don't you? Like,
yeah. You're a brand. Yeah, you're a brand. And Stipe's just not... He reminds me of like an old 1920s boxer, Stipe does. It was like, you know what I mean? Like, here's a story for you. There was a time when there was a fight. I've got a poster of him on my wall, and I've only ever seen maybe 15 seconds of him fighting. And his name was Edwin Gumboat Smith. Oh, recycling's here. His name was Edwin Gumboat Smith.
Yeah.
And when he was the US Navy heavyweight champion in the world. The reason that set him aside and the reason he's on my wall is because he never refused to fight with anybody. It didn't matter who they were, what colour, what race or anything like that. And when he was the heavyweight champ of the world, that belt was called the Great White Hope, which is just ridiculous if you think about that. Yeah, like, there was a segregation in boxing and he was the heavyweight champ. But when he got the belt, he was like, I'll fight anybody. And as soon as he did that, he opened the door to all of these incredible boxers and athletes that had previously been fighting amongst themselves and now were starting to get integrated into mainstream boxing.
Nice.
And although he was technically good, he just couldn't keep up with some of these guys that were coming through. And Stipe reminds me of that old school technical boxer that if he was fighting other old school guys that are from like early 2000s in the UFC, he'd have been able to manage it, you know?
Yeah.
But like the new fighters that are coming through, like Ngannou is just incredible.
You know, the UFC is like, I don't want to say evolution on steroids because that's a whole different conversation, but it's like a pressure cooker of evolution in it.
Yeah.
Like you don't get to stay still for a year because someone has already leveled up and then they've already leveled up. And like that, I think that's the point you're sort of making, is that you could be a champ for a little bit, but there's a rate limiter, isn't there?
Yeah.
And this new breed that are coming through is just, you know, it's tough to keep up with that top echelon.
Well, that, like, Stipe's a decent sized athlete.
Mm.
He's not particularly fast. He's not particularly strong. Like, there's no physical attributes about him that stand out. The reason he's been the heavyweight champion, he's been successful, is because he's been technically good.
Mm.
Kind of similar to like Glover Teixeira at light heavyweight.
Yeah,
you know, no physical attributes that stand out. Competitive, solid, strong enough, powerful enough, but nothing like he's not. He's not super quick like Cyril Gane. He's not super tall like you think of somebody else that Miocic struggled with, Stefan Struve, 7 foot tall. Like, he had all the technical ability to beat Struve, but that physical attribute was so problematic for him.
It's like the NFL. Like, you can't really play in the NFL. Well, there's a couple of positions you probably could, but you can't really play in the NFL unless you are a super athlete. Not a good athlete. You have to be a super athlete.
Yeah.
And there's like 60 odd people per team, and you know, I don't even know how many teams there are. So there's a lot of relative amount of spots to fill, but all of them are super athletes. They're either incredibly big, incredibly strong, incredibly fast, or like I was insinuating, the only position is maybe if you're incredibly skilled at quarterback, but you couldn't be 70 kilos.
No.
You could be the most skilled quarterback in the league, and you couldn't be 70 kilos. At some stage you're gonna get torn up by a goddamn raptor coming off one of those lines.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'll talk about your world. I have a video, literally a VHS video, and it's called Brian Moore's Rugby Punch-Ups.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you think back to, like, what was that, 1990s,
1980s? I love that the only thing you have to do with rugby is a punch-ups video.
Of course. Mate, honestly, that is one of the most brutal videos. There's, like, people getting studs in their face and all kinds of stuff.
I always say it's horrific when they fight in those games because you have no idea. It's a pub fight, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have no idea where it's coming from. It's, you know, just stand in front of me and, we'll go. It's fine.
And a lot of them were pub men. A lot of them,
and
that's the what I'm saying is, like, you were probably in the sport, or you probably helped influence that shift in a lot of ways, from the pub men that drink 12 pints after a game of rugby and, you know, do a couple of days training and be ready for the next weekend, to the point where you're taking like recruits in that are already great athletes into Leicester Tigers and then converting them into great rugby players. Like,
well,
there's
a bit of both. You know, recruitment wise, you still look at skill probably first, skill and understanding the game probably first, because you can build physicality to a certain point.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, exactly that. And there was even a shift over my, you know, I started at Leicester in 2004-05, and although it was full time professional, there was a relatively solid drinking culture. You know, people would, you know, they'd get on the piss definitely at the weekend, maybe, you know, they wouldn't tell us, but maybe once in the week, and you know play. It was just that right at the end of that early professionalism. But now, like, you know, I don't hear the stories quite so much anymore. Like, they're starting to see themselves as products and brands to a certain extent. It's difficult in a team sport because they're the brand, but you know, you got to look after yourself. I can make some money with this. I better look after it. You know,
it's like we were talking about the Oakland Raiders the other day. I mean, in those America's Game DVDs, I used to watch them during training camp. But like, you go back to the 1983 Raiders, like, you take the 83 Raiders and you put them against the Raiders today, who, the 83 Raiders, they were a Super Bowl winning team, weren't they? And then you've got the Raiders now, who are, you know, the Las Vegas Raiders. They're kind of middle of the road, whatever. I know very little about football at this point. But you wouldn't put those two teams next to one another. It wouldn't be competitive, because now you've got super athletes that know how to play football. And before, you had basically criminals and thugs, and like, there weren't many like what you would consider to be professional athletes on the team. They were big guys that loved to scrap. You've got John Matuszak clotheslining people. You've got one dude covered in stickum. You've got one guy with a cast on his thumb. broken thumb for five seasons. Like, it's just different. And so the point, the overall point I'm trying to make is, I think that this is the dawn of a new era at heavyweight. Mm. And I think like Stipe DC was the last
of kind.
The last of the kind.
Cyril Gane's in the new thread. You know what I mean? Like, he's big, but he moves quicker than you'd think someone that big can move.
Same with Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
Same with Chris Daukaus. I mean, you look at I'm looking more at the heavyweights coming up. It's like you could literally divide the heavyweight division into two.
You've got Chris Daukaus, don't you? Bring him up. There's something about him.
It's the way he moves.
Yeah.
There's a song in there somewhere. He doesn't move like a heavyweight.
Hmm.
Well, him and his brother are both very, very intelligent. Daukaus is I believe they're both police officers, but definitely Chris Daukaus is. But he's got super fast hands. He's a black belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which he's never really had to rely on. Yeah. But it's the way he applies the shots. Like, you watch people throwing punches and they look good, they look nice and sharp, but they're throwing it because that's what they've decided to throw. Whereas Daukaus, he finds his way in and he's like, okay, when he does this, I'm going to slip, I'm going to throw this. And there's a higher level processing to it. And the hand speed that he's got is not what you would expect.
Mm.
He's very, very quick. But like, I look at that, I mean, maybe you could divide the heavyweight division into three, because you've got some guys like Aspinall, Daukaus, Cyril Gane, guys that are really good athletes, that are big for the weight class.
Mm.
Like, I mean, Tom Aspinall's not massive, but he's still bigger than Stipe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Cyril Gane might not be the biggest puncher in the division, but he's got better conditioning and better movement than probably everybody else in the division.
Yeah, I agree.
Chris Daukaus might not be in the greatest shape of the world, but he's great on the ground and his hands have proven to be able to do the job alone. And then you've got Olenek, Blagoy Ivanov, Shamil Abdurakhimov, you know?
That one skill set of theirs in particular is the thing that's sort of keeping them where they're at, isn't it?
Exactly.
They're further away from being the complete MMA guy, but that skill set is just a bigger platform for them for everyone to catch up to, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Teixeira effect at heavyweight, I think Stipe represented the last of the normal human beings at heavyweight. I think him and DC was the last of the dad bod fights at heavyweight. I think now we've got like Derek Lewis. He doesn't move for a guy that's cut into 265 when he's flying knees and head kicks and springing back to his feet when he's been taken down.
He's going to get so much better. He just screams out to me that he's like he's already really good and he's just untapped potential. In a couple of years, he won't recognise himself now in a couple of years' time. Mm. He'll be like, look at that Rocky doing that.
Yeah. Did you see him wrecking that boxer that came into the gym sparring?
No.
There's a video floating around it from a couple of weeks ago. Some guy, basically a boxer, came into the gym and challenged him. And Derek Lewis, that's a pub fight.
Was he okay?
He was not okay. He was not okay. He was getting punched through the ropes at one point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to look that up. I like those.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that still happened.
Are you still doing that? No, it's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, it still happens. Gym invasions. I love Stipe. I think he's a great all round fighter, and you know, definitely one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. The more MMA, the more time passes though, the more we'll look at Stipe like a Cinderella man.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like someone that, well, he was the right person for his time, but like,
it's so
Gumboat Smith would not do anything in the heavyweight division right now. He was 6'2" and had a 72-inch reach. And he was the heavyweight champ of the world. Do you know what I mean?
So one of the beauties of this sport is, just as you think things are leveling out and settling, something disrupts it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like it never seems to stay where it is for more than not even a couple of years, really. It's pretty much yearly.
Mm.
Someone comes onto the scene, something changes. Oh, we can never go back now. This is the way it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Edward Gumboat Smith, his name was. I'm just going back to it because I find it a really interesting a really interesting story. But the reason he was famous and the reason he's on my wall is because he didn't refuse any fights. Like he would fight anybody because it was about boxing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was about boxing.
The love of the art.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, very cool.
Fascinating individual. February 17th, 1887, he was born.
Do you think they'll do the rematch? Or do you think they'll push for Jones?
I don't think they'll do the rematch. I'm not sure as Stipe feels like. I don't think he's going to feel confident enough that he can do anything different the second time around. I think as good as Stipe is and as effective as he is, I also think he's quite a realistic individual. Part of the reason maybe why he never left his job as a fireman. I don't think he looks at Ngannou now and thinks to himself, I could beat him in a rematch.
Do you think the Octagon thing might be that little tick in the back of his head? Give me a bigger Octagon, he's not going to catch me.
If I was Stipe's coach, I'd be weighing heavy on that in training camp. Yeah. If he wants to come back and fight again, I mean, the thing is, like, so even if Stipe came back to just fight a heavyweight, it's going to be just as risky.
Go down the list.
Like, who are they going to give him? Derek Lewis. Oh. Curtis Blaydes would be a fascinating fight. And if they need a fight for Curtis Blaydes to get him to the heavyweight title, that's it. But I don't think they do. I think, but see, that's another thing. Like, Blaydes, he lost to Ngannou after two rounds the first time because he got his eyes swelled shut. Second time around, he got dropped and took a bunch of shots, but still, he still insists that Goddard stopped that one early, which, I mean, I can see his argument, and if I was him, I would have wanted the fight to go a bit longer, but his legs were just gone, and he was taking shots to try and get back to his feet. But in Curtis Blaydes' head, it was still stopped too early by a referee, stopped too early by a doctor.
Effectively injury, yeah.
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 And he will also see what Stipe did the first time around and think to himself, I can replicate that because I'm a better wrestler.
Mm.
So, like, I think Stipe could come back and have a few interesting fights. I just don't know. I don't know where the value is unless he really wants to get back to the title. Maybe, and if he does, then just go for the rematch.
It might be. Maybe that's why Dana was a bit nonchalant about John Jones, is because he knows he's got some. He's got some interest. He doesn't have to make that mega fight. Obviously, it's good for business, but he doesn't have to make the mega fight straight away. And you know, the chips are sort of weighted in Dana, the organization's favor a little bit, aren't they? It's not like, oh, Jones is the only thing we can make right now. We've got to make it. Give him whatever he wants.
But that's the thing. Like if the fight was agreed and they had a contract with John Jones's name on it, agreeing to whatever pay they're offering, they would be promoting that fight like it's nothing else, because that's the fight to make and everyone knows it.
Yeah.
The only reason the fight's kind of getting shit on a little bit is because John Jones has not agreed to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So the more the UFC promoted, the more value there is in John Jones holding his ground.
They don't know what they're doing about everything, but they know what they're doing in this case.
They know how to play this game.
They definitely know how to play the game. Yeah.
They know how to play the game and how to keep that money out of the fighters' pockets. That's a guarantee. I hope John Jones gets what he's worth, because I tell you what, stepping in there against Ngannou is a life-changing decision.
Hmm.
You have to be realistic about that at heavyweight. Like, Alistair Overeem was lucky in that fight. That could have been a lot worse. That power that he can generate.
The stakes are higher than anywhere else, aren't they?
But, so much higher.
Like, they're both heavyweights, though. Do you know what I mean? It's not like me stepping in there. Then the stakes are ridiculously high.
Yeah.
For one of us.
but then it's not on John Jones. It's not on John Jones to make sure that Ngannou's getting paid enough to fight him.
Yeah.
John Jones knows how dangerous he is. If Jones gets in there with Ngannou, he's going to try and decimate his knee. He's going to try and dislocate his shoulder.
I think he could pick him apart.
I think he could. In the small octagon, though.
It's opening up, though. This wouldn't happen in the small octagon, would it?
No, they've got Super Spreader Saturday coming up, haven't they? They're going to get fucking a sold-out crowd of Floridians
in there.
They're
going to single-handedly lock down the whole of America.
Dude, I'm all for crowds again, but I think it might be too soon. Someone said that's the
least your worries in down there is getting corona.
Exactly, yeah.
Should we have a look back through? Miranda Maverick is here.
Yeah.
I thought she was great. Really enjoyed the fight, actually. Mm. And she clearly won, but it was pretty close for a lot of it, wasn't it? I thought Miranda's standing was really good. I thought she was really good. Laterally, she moves better than most in that division.
Yeah.
She clearly had the advantage. She cut off the cage a lot of the time when Gillian was trying to get away from her. I thought she was great.
Yeah.
And then it was really close on the floor, wasn't it? It was a proper chess match and just, you know, a couple of, she had a back taken a couple of times, and but she didn't seem to panic. She knew the sequence to keep that at bay. Yeah, good work, man. I really enjoyed that fight. I thought she was great.
I think Miranda Maverick's she's a very, very good contender in this division, and Robertson is a little bit of a she's a little bit of a gatekeeper at this point because she's only got a one sided game.
Yeah,
like she very good on the ground, grappling for MMA. Very, very good. Like, moves around people well, maintains a good weight on them whilst at the same time striking and progressing.
There's a very, very few times there's any detachment in there. She's always stuck on there. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful.
But then you can see how uncomfortable she is when she's backed up against the fence and forced to strike. And it's almost like she doesn't feel like she can hurt anybody with her strikes. It's kind of how it seems. It's like she's like, well, I can do this, but ultimately, it's just going to make me more vulnerable to getting hit myself. Yeah. So she gets kind of timid back up against the fence and like sticks a jab at her. They're like, please leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know? But then on the flip side, like you've got someone like Angela Hill who is smashing people with elbows. And you've got to think, like, if Jillian's so confident to get to the ground, there's nothing stopping her closing distance quickly and landing elbows and knees. And that's where she might be more effective. Mm. She just
that might be her evolution, you know. If her coaching team can put that together, and you know, sometimes you have to match. You just have to match your plan to what you're good at, don't you? Mm. Like it's not always about being the ultimate mixed martial artist. It's about fitting the right thing at the right time for the right person, and that might just be it. Mm. She might end up with a really limited game that is about closing distance, cutting elbows, take them down, and you know, she's very, very dominant in that top position.
Yeah.
On the ground, isn't she?
Yeah, 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 exactly, and that. That as well as being the main part of her game and where she really wants to win her fights, it's also a safety net for her, which some fighters don't have. So
yeah,
you know? And the thing, like, Din Thomas is her coach, and like she follows Din Thomas. Where like when he left ATT, she went there. She's very, very invested in Din Thomas. But if I'm Din, who is a great MMA coach, if I'm Din, I'm thinking to myself, I need to give her a different look, like. What I would do is bring in someone like Phil Nurse would be great, you know, like a proper Thai boxing coach or something like that.
Was that the guy
like
we were thinking about a couple of shows ago? We were trying to get the Thai boxing. It had something to do with GSP, didn't it?
Yeah,
Do you think that's someone else?
No.
Because that's who I was thinking about when you were saying that.
It's just come to me. The guy I was talking about, the Thai boxing coach, his name was Yod Willek.
Okay.
That's who GSP was being trained by. He was around the same age as GSP, maybe a little bit older, but not much. But he was a Thai champion, and he was over in Montreal working with GSP. Mm. But you remember when I fought GSP, he had Phil Nurse in his corner, who's the British dude that's got a school in New York, the Watt. Yeah. He's got a school called the Watt in New York. I feel like the benefit in her working with a strict Thai boxer is she gets those slamming rounds on pads. Mm. Bam, bam. Bam, bam, whack, 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 knee, elbow. And, you know, it doesn't even necessarily have to...
Where's that tie pad? Where's the new tie pad?
Oh, it's in the other room.
Oh, sure, no, look next time.
I'm just going to tease this. It's not real snake.
no snakes were harmed in the creation of this.
No snakes were harmed in the making of this pad. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
I'm just teasing this. You can't buy these yet, but you will be able to very soon.
Heavily in development.
Heavily in development. Yeah,
we'll get there. We'll get in there.
Oh, finally. Yeah. Of all the gloves I've got and tried on,
I've
finally got some that actually fit a closed fist
properly. Give us a few more months, we'll get them out for you.
We'll get there. They need to be perfect.
Yeah, 100%.
I think she needs some like slamming rounds of Muay Thai and just like
even just for the confidence. Yeah. Like you say, she's timid about, she knows she's normally outmatched. We'll give her a little bit, and then at least she can use it to set something up. You know, hit a solid double and go to the thing she's good at.
Yeah. Or at least put volume in your opponent's direction so they want to clinch.
Mm. Well, so what do you do with, like, Miranda now? You probably don't want to rush her and throw her up there just because she's on a, you know, she's saying all the right things in terms of she looks like she's got potential to do something in this division. You just probably won't want to rush her too quickly, I don't think.
No.
A lot of people are matched up above her.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the rankings. See if there are good options above her. There really are, even just inside the top 15.
But Lee's matched, Shevchenko's matched, Santos and Roxy are matched. You've got...
I mean, Jillian's at number 15.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and what is it? It's Monday today, so that will most likely change tomorrow. So Maverick will probably find herself inside the top 15.
Alexa Grasso would be great.
Alexa Grasso
would
be
great. She's coming off
fight.
A win. I'm not sure she'll be looking
at...
She'll
Andrea
be
Lee,
out, won't she?
Is she still out?
No, she's
injured.
Matched.
Is she?
Yeah, I can't remember. She might be a match with Antonia Shevchenko.
Okay. Macy Barber would be a good scrap because they're both like physically imposing.
Actually,
as well.
That's probably one. What's she 13th?
14th. Yeah, Barber is
14th, 15th.
Mm.
That's maybe not a bad interim. Like I say, you don't want to rush Miranda straight up there for her to.
You don't want to give her someone like a Roxanne Modafferi. You might just be a bit technically too much right now. I think Shevchenko might be an interesting one. She's matched up though.
I think she's matched with Andrea Lee.
Yeah, I mean maybe the winner of that one.
Hmm.
Macy Barber's an interesting one because she wins a lot of her fights on the fact that she's very physical.
Yeah,
and I think
Miranda Maverick
might cancel each other out, and that's where I think that's where we'll see some skill deficits on one side or the other. And I actually think Miranda Maverick's technically more skilled than Macy Barber at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think she'll be intimidated by her athleticism either because they are relatively close in terms of pure athlete.
Miranda Maverick looks in good shape when you see her on camera, but when she came into the Fight Week interviews in Fight Island, like she's like compared to everybody else on the card, you're like, geez, like she's...
What, henched?
Hench.
Yeah.
Heavily muscled, very lean, but also, sits there and he's very articulate as well. Like I said, she was studying for her PhD.
Right. Very cool.
And she's, you can tell there's that place bar and vibe about the way that she fights as well. Not everything's a power punch.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what they do. Mm. But it'll be, she's in a good spot.
I think so. There's a whole bunch of fights lower down that we've not talked
about.
Yeah. What about Oleg Shejuk and Bukauskas?
I mean, I don't know what you thought, but I thought Bukauskas won that.
Did you?
Split decision, right?
Yeah, it was a split decision.
And I get it. It's difficult. It's difficult to paint the picture that you're winning when you're going backwards.
Yeah.
For a majority of that fight, but I just thought he edged it.
Yeah. The whole going backwards thing. That's something that the judges need to fix in their own mind. Like I've been researching for that the Glory fight that I'm breaking down. I'm doing that later today. Alex Pereira against Artem Vakitov. There was one of the judges scored all five rounds for Vakitov.
Yeah,
and there's just no way.
Yeah,
I like to look at the scorecards and go, okay, so what did they see? Like, why did they score every round to that fighter? And literally the only thing I can bring it down to in that fight is that it's because he was moving forward.
Yeah.
It's the only way that you score every round
forward,
to
him. Do you know what I mean?
Especially
you're gonna
behind
pick
big
me apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing is, Oleg Shejuk is he hurt him a few times. And that last round, the biggest punch in that last round was a body shot.
Mm.
And that hurt him
that
bad.
That was lovely, weren't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and like
I don't know why there's something so much more like gratifying when someone lands a body shot, even more than like a KO. Because everyone goes, oh,
yeah,
that hurt.
Yeah,
yeah,
and those body shots as well. I mean, I don't believe in accidental shots as well. Oh, that's something else we could talk about. Askren's reply to Masvidal and saying you got lucky. I'm gonna tell you a little story. We're just gonna divert you. So I interviewed Ben Askren before the Damian Maia fight, right? And I like Askren. We've always had good conversations. And I expected when I asked him this question, he was going to be able to go, oh, yeah, no, I saw this. This is what happened. This is the mistake I made, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't. And in that moment, I was disappointed. I was like, oh. Because what had happened was, obviously, he was coming off the Masvidal knockout and he was going into the Damian Maia fight. This was in Singapore. And I when he sat down, I said to him, so what's your process been since the Masvidal knockout? And he was just kind of, it was just one of those things. So I said, have you watched the fight back and did you figure out why it happened? And it was like, well, I just level changed onto a flying knee. I'm like, there's so much more to it than that.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, Masvidal was drilling the technique. He knew exactly what he was going to throw before he got in there.
And he knew that that was his tick. Yeah. He knew that that was his thing.
Level changes with his head to that side. Like the breakdown I did on Inside the Octagon, where you can compare the level change against Robbie Lawler and the level change against Masvidal. He's in exactly the same situation. Arms out, head to the left, like right in the position where Masvidal threw the knee. Like,
if Masvidal runs at you, what are you going to do? The thing you know best.
Gonna level
That's
change.
The thing you're going to go to. Yeah.
That's why when people get backs up against the fence, you can force them to level change onto a knee because you know their characteristic.
Yeah. Yeah, that is disappointing, isn't it?
It was so frustrating because it just wasn't a lucky knee. There's no such thing, it just happened. And don't get me wrong, if they fought 10 times, Masvidal probably wouldn't land it another 9 times. You know, he'd maybe land it once, but it's doubtful. That was a perfectly executed knockout. Mm. He knew exactly what he was doing. He knew exactly where Askren was going
to
be.
A lot of variables happening in real time to time that and land it.
He
got enough credit for it, didn't he?
And then you watch him peel out of the corner, and Masvidal, he comes out and he goes over towards the right and then cuts back across to the left to force him to get his head to that side. So he was there for the knee. Yeah.
Good on him.
And then like that reply to Masvidal is like, oh, well, you know, just to look at it.
Yeah, but he's all in
shows
that.
A lack
he's,
of
all,
examination.
He's all in that. At the minute, when stuff with YouTube is happening, I just don't know what's real and what's not. Do you know what I mean? It's just talk and nonsense and belly slapping and stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know what's going on right now.
Yeah.
To be honest, I disengage from it a little bit, but you know.
I quite like this whole thriller thing that's happening.
Yeah.
I quite like it.
I'd like it if you fought Oscar De La Hoya.
Oh, mate, I'd love that
I'd buy
fight.
Into that.
I'd love that fight.
I'd buy into that massacre.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, who have we got? Where are we at? Menifield.
Well, you thought Bukauskas took it, did you?
I think, yeah. I mean, it was close, and I get that it was a split decision, but it was a close.
I'm just looking at the strikes landed. I mean, you know, Bukauskas outstruck him by a few strikes in the first and second round, but then that last round, Oleg Shejuk beat him by 5 punches. I mean, there's not much in it, really.
No. Split decision, I guess, but I did feel like Oleg Shejuk maybe hurt him a bit more with what he did land. Bukauskas maybe landed a bit more, but didn't really hurt him quite as much, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's what they saw, but...
Yeah.
I like them both. I think they've both got, you know, they've both got a good run in them, I think.
I want Oleg Shejuk to cut to middleweight and fight Gastelum.
Oh, yeah.
That's the fight. He's not a light heavyweight, is he? Let's be honest.
No. He did look a bit dwarfed.
He did, yeah. And you know, and he fights with that style because he knows he's got gas for days and it's not going to run out. You know, that's how he won his previous fights in the UFC, is just by being too much for the guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reasonable amount of body fat on him. He could do that cut.
Yeah.
You know, could lean him up a little bit.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I mean, Bukauskas is a big individual for that weight class. I wonder whether he's got the firepower, though, at this level to
really
like
I said, he
did damage.
Land clean a few times and he just didn't get an effect.
Oleg Shejchuk's just, I like his nickname as well, Lord. Lord Oleg Shejchuk. What about Abubakar?
Oh,
I can't say it like that. I can't say it
don't
like
you
that.
Start.
Abubakar.
Abubakar was, I thought he was like excellent.
It's clinical,
it
isn't it?
Excellent, yeah. He just mixed everything up. And Gooden's, you know, he's dangerous in the fact that he does have a level of skill. And he's clearly, you know, he's clearly a good athlete. Mm. And, you know, Nurmagomedov is outmatched on athleticism there, but just picked him apart, didn't he?
Yeah.
Mixed it up, you know, blended everything really well.
Yeah.
And then he just got more dominant and dominant as the rounds went on. Mm-hmm. Must be suffocated him.
Technically just really, really clean. Mm. Puts things together well. And I think Gooden's one of those guys that's problematic on the levels before you get to the UFC.
Well, you know, before I said there was a guy that was gonna say that you just get a feeling for where he's gonna sit.
Yeah,
he ain't gonna be in the top 15.
No,
like he's just not that guy. Like he can have a good career, but it's not gonna be, you know, it's not gonna be at that level.
No,
or he has too much to do to get to that level.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he gets through a lot of these fights because he's so conditioned and heavily muscled.
Yeah.
You know, he took some shots because
he's
got
a nice,
thick
he's got a
neck.
Nice jab on him.
Yeah.
You know, he's got some skills, isn't he? He's just, I just don't think he has the variety of skills to take him past probably where he's at.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
But I think Abubakar can definitely continue to progress. especially because he's had a couple of those setbacks, and now the pressure's off him. You know, he's carrying a lot of weight.
I don't think they'll rush him. I think they'll build him. You know,
it's having Khabib in his corner as well is going to help him, because the UFC benefits so much from having him in the corner that it makes sense for them to gradually build him. It does.
I'd imagine to a degree that crew has a relatively heavy say in dictating what happens with their fighters. Do you know what I mean? They're so lucrative to the organization that they'll be like, oh, okay, we'll do that.
Well, the reality is that, like, you know, Russia and Dagestan, they've got an MMA industry in themselves. Mm. Like, if you're a Polish fighter, it makes more sense to sign for KSW because they'll make a big star out of you and they'll pay you more. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's the same, like, that's what they're up against. The reason that the Nurmagomedov guys are over in the UFC is because of the accolades that come with the UFC belt. But if they're chasing money, there's other options for them. They can get weighed in their own region of the world and, you know,
Be superstars.
Yeah. They're here because they want to, you know, have that belt and the accolades that come with it. And I think that they'll build him gradually.
I can't see why they wouldn't. No. It just doesn't make sense on a few different levels, isn't it?
No, it doesn't, yeah. I mean, you know, David Zavada was a tough first fight for him. But easy for the UFC to underestimate Zavada. Mm. Easy for them to underestimate him, for sure. A couple of good quick finishes. Menafield with a Von Pru choke.
Oh, I was just thinking the whole time, like, if you're in his corner, if you're in the other guy's corner, you'd be like, let it go, let it go, it's coming, let it go.
I mean, he resisted it fairly well for a while, but, I mean, the upper body on Menafield, he's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah.
He's just a slab, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy you could take and plug him into a different sport and he'd do fairly well, regardless of what it is, just because of his physical prowess.
Very, very, very much so.
But I felt for, what's his name, for his opponent, when you got that close-up of him and you can like see shoulder just across his face and he's like
anterior deltoid just horrific.
And then Jamie Malarkey as well.
He was great, wasn't he? Really good. That's funny, you know, we've talked about before how techniques get passed down through lineage.
Yeah.
So I came across it on Twitter, so it looked very much like Ross, right? Yeah. It looked very much jab, roll, left hook. You've seen Ross do that before.
Yeah.
And I think what's his name? Coach Eric down in...
he's at Alliance now.
Alliance, so then he said, oh, that looks familiar. So it was obviously like a lineage of technique had come all the way through. Beautifully executed, wasn't it? So he threw it before. Mm. He threw it at, I think, 4:40 on the clock.
Mm.
He threw it, but he just got glove.
Yeah.
And then he threw it again and just got it clean.
Him responding to the right hand, didn't he?
Yeah. Like
he pinged him with the right hand and hurt him.
Yeah.
And then he followed the... Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Malarkey. I like when he came into, was it Brad Riddell that he made his debut against, and it was just a war.
That was a proper
like
war.
On their knees at the end of the third round, still trying to hit each other.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can't. That's the thing you can't teach. Mm. You can't put that in someone really. But everything else you can teach, and Ross is obviously is working with him a lot. Like, I follow both of them, and that, you know, they're all about it. Like, this is it. And
he's got some dogs in that gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got some dogs in that gym.
It looks
gym.
A good spot. It's a beautiful part of that country as well.
Fair play to him.
Yeah.
But that, I'm glad that Malarkey got a big win there, because he's one that will progress very quickly in the fans' eyes.
He just needed that. You know? He just needed that, didn't he?
He's a Clay Guida, Darren Elkins kind of, and I don't mean that he's all guts and no logic, because he's a good fighter as well, but if and when it gets into the trenches, he's more than happy to stand and train. Even his earlier fights before he came over to the UFC, there was some real back and forth bloodbaths.
Yeah. He's one of those that could have been lost. Like, if he just happened to not win this, he could have been sort of lost to the promotion. You know, two losses, then it's all the pressure on the third one. So I'm really glad he got that win, because it'll keep him in there. And I think, like you say, I think he can, you know, it can be a bit of trouble, can't he?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We've got two fights that we've not talked about.
Well,
what do you want to talk about? Go on.
Hold on, which one have we missed? Oh, sure. Sean looked like who we spoke about it in the preview. Like, I like who he wants to be, and he just was one step closer to being that guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That man, when he moves like that, he's very, very good.
Yeah, he is. The thing is with Thomas Almeida, like if you take him and you put him in there with someone like Pedro Munoz or Jimmy Rivera or John Lineker, you know, someone that's, I mean, even someone, yeah. that, Eddie Wineland, I'm just like someone that is, they're going to stand in the same stance, they're going to throw the punches on the same trajectory.
Technique.
Like he would do much better fighting someone that's a mirror image of himself. And as soon as O'Malley starts to, he's like high on his toes and he's leaning in and he's dancing around into southpaw, and then he's,
it's almost like hypnotizing. Yeah, it's like you just freeze him.
You get
frozen because you don't quite know what the picture is.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I think Sean O'Malley's he's very skilled and he's very talented. I'm interested to see who can push him. And I know Dominic Cruz mentioned he'd like to fight
him. This morning.
That's the fight to make.
Yeah.
I honestly think he might be too much for Cruz at this point.
Really?
Yeah, I do. Because I think Cruz has been great for a long time.
Yeah.
But you think Cruz taking some of those hop sidekicks to that knee that Almeida took a lot of?
Yeah, he took one really solid one.
Just decimate his knees. His already brittle knees. I mean, this is by no means that Sean O'Malley's a better MMA fighter and has more knowledge than Dominic Cruz, because I don't think that's the case at all. But I think right now the way that O'Malley moves is a good counter to what Dominic Cruz does. Mm. And I think the smaller octagon, the longer arms, the confidence, the confidence alone would get inside Dominic Cruz's mind. The fact that he's asked for the fight shows that Sean O'Malley's already in his mind.
Yeah, it's a fight you can get people to buy into that. Mm. People will watch that,
especially after the win, after a win like that over Almeida. And I know Almeida's had a rough time recently, but
I don't know where he goes now. What does he do? It's four in the bounce.
I don't know, bantamweight. I mean, I won't mind seeing him over in one.
Yeah.
I won't mind seeing him over there. One, or
I mean, it is cutting season, isn't it?
It kind of is. Yeah. And he might be on the chopping block, which would be such a shame, because he's one of the good guys in this division. He's not adapted to this new style of MMA.
He's another one. He looked dwarfed by Sean, didn't he? Sean just looked big and long and just Yeah. We'll see what happens. Yeah, good for Sugar Man. I thought he looked good. I know he polarizes people a little bit, and
it's kind of
we don't live in the same world to a lot of extent. He's more like to live in my kids' world than my world. But I like who he is as an athlete. I think he's on the right track. I like what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like look at those rankings. Like the fact that above him in the so. O'Malley's not ranked at the moment. Marlon Vera, Kyla Phillips, Cody Stamen, Marab Dvalishvili, Jimmy Rivera, Rafael Assunção, and then Dominic Cruz. Like, Dominic Cruz has kicked the door wide open. Yeah. Like, come on into the bantamweight division. Yeah. Come on in.
Man, he's leapfrogging probably two more fights he would have to do to get there at least, isn't it? And some flipping savages.
Mate, can you imagine him against Kyla Phillips?
Yeah.
That'd be a hell of a fight. Yeah.
That's
the way forward.
That's probably the fight if Cruz hadn't said anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like that's why you can see, because Cruz has got no real benefit in fighting Sean O'Malley.
No.
Like he should be looking up the rankings at other people he can face. And
interesting move.
I think that's a really risky one for him. What about Tyron Woodley?
Well,
he tried,
not,
didn't
that's
he?
Not going to bloody encourage him to fight like that.
He tried though, didn't he?
Yeah, that's sort of who we want. That's sort of who we want, and that's not, you know, he's got negative feedback. But I was thinking, you know, he's obviously had some.
He got fight of the night though.
I did it.
Yeah, that was a bit of a.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's a bit of. This is what we've been waiting for all along.
Two things. One, Vicente is a murderer. Like he is. He's going to be there or thereabouts, isn't
he? Yeah, he is.
For sure. Yeah. And then I was thinking about Tyron, whether at least he's recognised what people have criticised him for. Now, maybe he's swung down the other end of the spectrum and he's just gone out, all guns blazing, and hopefully he finds himself somewhere back here, or he's like, right, that'll do, I'm done.
He'll find himself in any middle ground.
Nothing.
No, I don't. I think I can starch him with one punch, but if I throw five of these and miss every one, I'm done. And at 38, he's nearly 39.
Man, his body, when he gets hit hard and he gets fatigued, his body just shuts down, doesn't it? It's like basically, I'm done.
Yeah.
There's no coming back from this. The edge of the cliff has come.
Yeah. You can see how much effort it takes him to stop those punches that he misses as well.
So much power.
Yeah.
Yeah. The energetic cost of that is huge, isn't it? He just can't do it.
But like, as we were talking about with Luke, you know, he progresses and progresses, and then they give him a benchmark fight, and then he falls.
Yeah, right.
And then he goes.
So now he's done it.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I guess watching it, your sort of focus was on Tyron because you're like, oh, whoa, who's this?
Mm.
But then when I watched it back again, I was like, fair play to Vicente. You know, you've got Tyron basically running at you, coming at you, all guns blazing, and all you've done is moved, covered up, got took up to the fence, reversed it, put him on the fence, fatigued him, and then picked him apart. Mm. Like it was a real pragmatic performance.
Yeah.
And when you're already sort of as violent as Vicente is, and you have that pragmatism, you're starting to layer things together where you could, you know, put something together where you could end up being the champ.
Mm. Keep edging his way forward in the division gradually.
Yeah, man.
He's at number 10 at the moment, but that will probably move a little bit after that win against Woodley, who's at number 7. I don't think they'll change positions necessarily, but then Damian Maia's above him, and Maia I don't even think is going to fight again.
He beats Maia anyway, I think.
I think he beats Maia.
Who's above Maia?
Well, Neil Magny's right above Luque. Then you've got Maia, then it's Woodley, and then Chiesa, Thompson, Masvidal, Edwards, Burns, Covington. Like, you're right into the top then.
But I can see him up there.
Yeah, I could.
I can see him up there.
I could see him. I think Wonderboy Thompson would be an interesting one, given the fact that Wonderboy will punish him for being very square on, but he might be aggressive enough to shut down Wonderboy's side.
I wouldn't do that to him yet.
Would you not?
I'd give him one more.
He had a crack at Wonderboy, though, and lost a decision.
Yeah.
And that was a while ago. And, you know, Wonderboy's late 30s now. He's probably on his way down.
Yeah, true.
We're ready for a change in the guard in the division. You could take 30% of those welterweights and retire them pretty soon, you know, given the fact that on age alone, you know. Like, Robbie Lawler's currently at number 15 still. Like, Lawler's probably on his way out. Meyer's almost definitely on his way out. Woodley is on his way out. Thompson's on his way to 40. You've got to think that he's going to be done soon.
Wow, that's the division of change, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of similar to heavyweight. Kind of, you can get away with it for longer at heavyweight because experience pays off a lot more at heavyweight. But I think Luque's right up there. I think he's right up there.
Yeah, it's crying out for like a rebirth of that division, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think Luque is definitely going to be one of them. It'll be interesting to see who the next couple are that go with him.
Mm. Yeah, well, Bilal Muhammad's still on the rise, isn't he? Even after that eye poke.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the rising fighters, isn't Sean Brady with the wicked tattoos.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. That's the three that are going to come up and through.
Yeah, and you know, Jeff Neal's still floating around there. Max Griffin had a good win the other week. Yeah. I know he's outside the top 15, but that for the first time I thought to myself, okay, Griffin might have a shot, yeah. Griffin! I can't do that without thinking of Family Guy every time. Griffin! What's that? It's the one where Chris is cool. Anyway, what haven't we talked about? I mean, we've kind of covered it all. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, no. I mean, there's no UFC this week coming up. There's nothing to preview. What we got? Anything this weekend?
Not that I know of. No, not that I can think of. We're kind of gearing up because we've got the Bellator Grand Prix coming up.
Yeah.
Which we'll discuss at some point in the future. Canelo against Billy Joe Saunders is coming up as well. I've not watched the Povetkin Dillian White fight. No. I'm going to watch that later.
Yeah.
But I am today. I'm breaking down
the glory fight.
Yeah. The contentious split decision.
This will be good, man. I think people are going to like this crossing over to kickboxing and having a look, and you breaking that down and having a look.
Mate, the amount of old school fights popular that we're going to be popping up on the channel soon, like old Bonjasky fights and Hoost fights and stuff. So we're working closely with Glory, and we're going to bring you some really interesting content. But I'm going to start off with the Pereira Vakitov fight, which is not an easy one to break down. It's a very, very tight fight. I'm going to break that one down, and then I'm into the Till Vittori card.
Wicked.
But I've got a schedule. There's loads of fights coming up. So,
kind of weird as
having a review card and nothing to talk about after.
Yeah, it is. So what are we looking at, the ride-along for Till Vittori or the one after?
261.
261. Yeah,
I'm still waiting on the banner arriving, but once
that's
cool,
man, that'd be fun.
Yeah, yeah, we have a couple of new like weekly shows coming up. One of them is going to be the ride-along because we've had loads and loads of requests for a companion type of show, but we're doing it our style, of course, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So we're just waiting on 2 3-seater sofas and a backdrop to arrive, and then we're going to get into that.
And some serious amounts of caffeine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I might be in the ride along like this.
No, you won't.
Just keep talking.
You won't. I can barely hold still when the fight's on, so I'll keep nudging you and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, all good. Nice.
Easy week for us.
Easy.
Nice one. Thanks for joining us. I would say they enjoy the fights this weekend, but there are none. So go back and watch some old school ones or check out some of the stuff on the channel. The Raptors are doing loads of stuff at the moment on the channel. There's Mads Burnell stuff going up there. There's some stuff with Jesse Jess.
Yeah, so part two of the Mads Burnell thing is going up tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, well, actually, it'll be up by now. By the time this goes out, that'll be up.
Mads is super slick. Super, super slick. Definitely is one of the best in his weight class in the world, for sure. I'd drop him in against any of these featherweights right now.
Yeah. Loads on the channel, man. It's humming at the minute. Jump on and have a look. Yeah.
Wicked.
And check out Unbound Merino.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Click the link. Grab yourself some Merino wool garms. Very nice. What's that video game?
Come to the dark side.
Not that one. What's the ninja video game?
Assassin's Creed. Mate, yeah. I'm all over it. Yeah, you said that now. I'm never taking this hoodie off again. Okay. All good?
Yeah, wicked.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. See you next time.
Nice.